while the world whizzes by. Enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, September 3rd, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Ryan, how was your Labor Day?
I worked, you know, as I'm wont to do, but it was actually sort of like working holidays because it's always so chill.
You
really get in our business particularly, you really get a day that relaxed. So it's kind of nice.
Excellent. Okay. So let's kick things off with some box office discussion and then we'll transition into some more traditional news items after that. So run through the top 10 at the box office for me, would you?
Will do. And just so everyone knows, normally, you know, so on like a holiday weekend, you'll get the Monday numbers are typically lumped in with the, you know, cause you get like a 4-day holiday weekend. I'm just going over the 3-day weekend numbers, but just understand that, you know, there are some Monday numbers floating around as well. But for the 3-day weekend, we had Deadpool and Wolverine once again taking the top spot in its 6th weekend. So 5 out of 6 weekends, Deadpool and Wolverine has been in the number one spot. Just $15.1 million, though. So, you know, it's holding well, but not great when your number one movie is sub $20 million. Number two was Alien Romulus with another $9 million. That's holding really well. We'll talk more about that in a second. Number three was Twisters, which jumped up 25% over the weekend with another $7.6 million. A lot of that had to do with coming back to 4DX. Number four was a bit of a surprise with Reagan, the new Ronald Reagan biopic, which made $7.6 million and had a pretty damn good per screen average. So a little bit of a surprise there. Number five was It Ends With Us, still holding very well, $7.4 million in its fourth weekend, just dropping 36% there. Number six was Blink Twice, which dropped 34% in its second weekend for $4.8 million, so holding pretty okay there. Number seven was last week's weekend surprise, which was The Forge, which made another $4.6 million, again dropping just about 31%. At number eight, we have Despicable Me 4 with another $4 million, dropping just less than 5% in its 9th weekend. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. Number nine was a new horror movie that I don't know if a lot of people even knew was coming out this weekend from Sony Pictures called Afraid, which is a new AI horror thriller, made just $3.6 million on over 3,000 screens, so not a great look there. And at number 10, if you believe it, Coraline's 15th anniversary still holding strong, $3.1 million, dropping just 38% in its third weekend of release. So that's really impressive stuff.
Wow, man, that movie just will not stop.
No, I don't know what the final numbers are, but the last email I got, so I think last weekend I wrote up a thing for us about it, and Box Office Mojo had it at about like 32 million, I think, but the overseas numbers were much bigger, and Fathom had sent out like a press release where it was at 38 million global, but that was last weekend, so I don't know what the total number is now for the 15th anniversary. But domestically, it's at 30.2 million. So it's done gangbusters business. I mean, that's just truly, truly crazy stuff. So that's pretty cool.
So Labor Day, I think we've talked about this before, sort of heading into it. Labor Day, kind of an abandoned weekend by the studios to some degree. And it kind of seems like these numbers bear that out, right? Like just the idea that the number one movie is sub 20 million and then it goes down from there.
Yeah. Historically, it is a bit of an abandoned weekend because a lot of people tend to be doing the Hollywood thinking is that people are doing non-movie things, right? But we saw a few years ago with Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings did huge business over Labor Day weekend. And so I do see this as a weekend where there's possibly some opportunity that is a little uncapitalized on. I look at something like Horizon that just absolutely tanked over the summer. I can't imagine. I mean, I don't know that, I'm not saying a better release date would have saved it necessarily, but certainly would have been a lot less direct competition over a weekend like this. So I don't know, but yeah, I mean, it's kind of a calm before the storm because Beetlejuice comes out this upcoming weekend, and that is the projections just keep going up, 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 up for that. Like, even when I wrote my box office preview, the numbers were revised up shortly after, and it's like almost assured to make over 100 million. So, I mean, we're going to be, you know, in much better situation here in a few days. But
okay. All right. So, yeah, what stories from this top 10 really jump out at you that you wanted to touch on here?
Well, I think one of the bigger things we should talk about is it fell just outside the top 10, but Inside Out 2 made another $2.6 million domestically this weekend. And its total is now at $1.667 billion worldwide. That is important because it is now the ninth highest grossing movie of all time, dethroning 2019's The Lion King remake, which means the debate of what is the highest grossing animated movie of all time is firmly put to bed. Now, Disney had previously claimed that Inside Out 2 had the record beating Frozen 2, but there are people that would argue that 2019's The Lion King remake is an animated movie, despite, you know, looking photorealistic or whatever. I am not here to settle that argument. I am just here to tell you that it is now unquestionable that Inside Out 2 is the highest grossing animated movie of all time. So at the very least, that element of the debate has been put to bed.
I mean, you know what's going to happen, don't you, Ryan? Like, the funniest thing that Disney could possibly do would be to re-release Jon Favreau's Lion King in the lead up to the Mufasa movie that's coming out in December. So that movie then overtakes Inside Out 2, and then the debate opens back up all over again.
Maybe for a minute, but I also think Inside Out 2 is probably going to end up getting a re-release at some point. You know, so I don't know. We'll see how that shakes out. But Inside Out 2 is probably going to pass Jurassic World here in a couple of days to take the number 8 spot. But that's as high as it's going to climb. But I don't think any of us had Inside Out 2 getting into the top 10 all time on our bingo cards. So that's pretty incredible. The only other thing I want to point out is that Lionsgate released a movie called 1992 over the weekend. It's about the 1992 LA riots. Tyrese is in it. It is Ray Liotta's final movie. It put up a semi-respectable $1.4 million on less than 900 screens, but it seemed like this is one that Lionsgate kind of buried, but I'm also seeing, like, it seems like a lot of the reactions to it are pretty good. So I don't know what happened here. I don't know what the situation is. I don't know why this didn't get more of a push. I'm very curious to see it myself. It looks like my kind of movie, but I just, you know, with being Ray Liotta's final movie, and it was an odd situation to me. I welcome if any of the listeners check it out, please let us know or whatever. But I just seems like an odd thing for Lionsgate to just kind of toss out there. So I don't know.
Yeah. After you had that conversation with the producer of Tarot earlier this year, that has me thinking that, like, maybe it was a strategic decision where they must have, like, plugged a bunch of numbers into some sort of algorithm or something and realized that, like, by spending big, it wouldn't necessarily get the result that they were looking for. So maybe they just decided to go with, like, a more targeting thing. Cause I don't even think I've ever seen a trailer for this movie. I think the only reason I know it exists is because I write for Slash Film and edit articles and stuff. And I don't think we've covered it really on the site before, but having seen, you know, press releases and deadline.com articles and, like, being as entrenched in the world as we are, it just kind of barely came across my radar. So I imagine that, you know, folks who don't pay as close attention as we do would have just straight up never heard of this before, because, like you said, Lionsgate just did not do, like, a full blitz marketing thing. But yeah, curious decision there. If anybody knows, definitely hit us up.
Yeah, that just struck me as an odd thing. And I guess just for the sake of, like, it's Ray Liotta's last movie, we should at least put it on people's radar a little bit, I guess, but not that that onus is on us. But just going outside the top 10 just for another quick second, Shaun of the Dead was re-released for its 20th anniversary. It was only on 133 screens, but it did $560,000. So, you know, that's over $4,000 per screen. So that's pretty good per screen average there. So people still turning out for that one. We should talk a little bit about Reagan. Movie did very poorly, you know, review wise largely, but it had, like, an A cinema score, and it is the first release from this new distributor called Showbiz Direct, and they're kind of aiming to sort of help fill gaps where, you know, not necessarily release, like, big tent poles, but maybe kind of, you know, take what's left when those tent poles are absent. And this movie, I believe, had, like, a $25 million budget, and it made $10 million already domestically. So it actually stands a decent shot at doing okay in theaters, and probably will capitalize very well on VOD. So it's kind of interesting to see what might happen there with this new distributor. And, you know, with more and more Hollywood studios being swallowed up, having someone else in the marketplace isn't a terrible thing. I'm not here to comment on Reagan as a movie, but like,
of course,
you know, that's interesting. So, you know, they've had success at their first at bat, I guess, is the main thing.
Yeah, I suspected we might be talking about that movie in that context on today's episode, because it feels like one of those movies that is designed to appeal to an audience that is historically underserved in theaters. I mean, you could maybe make the case that like this could have been a streaming movie or something like that, but I think they made the calculation, and based on that that's math that I was kind of alluding to, where like they know that there's a certain number of audience members who are out there who are willing to see something like this if they can find them, if they can target them properly. And it seems like they did, even though it's a pretty small movie and with a pretty small campaign. Again, that's not one that I saw a trailer for, you know, blasted in front of like a national football game or anything like that. But
yeah, it had a pretty strong presence at CinemaCon. And you know, as you know, that's a big, you know, convention for specifically aimed at distributors. And my understanding is that the company actually like went directly to distributors to sort of like be like, hey, like we think there's value here. Help us push this movie. And apparently that worked, you know, so it's kind of an interesting look. I don't know. Again, I'm just a guy that wants to see theaters succeed. And if this helps, okay. You know, yeah. I think for me, the other thing I'd really talk about is Afraid. This was hardly on my radar. John Cho, Catherine Waterston, seemingly prevalent premise with this whole AI notion, and it just did not break through in any way, shape, or form. Blumhouse is on a bit of a rough streak a little bit with some of their originals, and you know, I mean, they've had Insidious, The Red Door, of course, they had Five Nights at Freddy's, but they're struggling quietly. By Blumhouse standards, at least.
I wonder what they have coming up. Do you know if they have
Speak No Evil? Speak No Evil coming out, which I was super skeptical about, because I'd seen the original and it just felt like, how do you do this? And I will say that I was actually very taken aback by the Speak No Evil remake. And I think it has a shot at getting some decent word of mouth. I also think Wolfman is another one that, in January has a chance to really break out like Megan style. Plus they have Megan 2.0 next year. So I think they have stuff that's on the way, but you know, again, getting those, like what Blumhouse traditionally did very well was, you know, we create franchises, and now they're sort of relying on a little bit more on stuff that's already hit. So I don't know. It's kind of fascinating to me that it's just, that they've had struggled a little bit this year, I guess, with like, you know, Night Swim, Imaginary, now Afraid. You know, obviously there's the whole thing with Exorcist Believer last year, but that wasn't necessarily purely their fault. Not fair to pin that on them, but just kind of interesting to me, I guess, to note that like Blumhouse isn't really crushing it on all fronts as they once had.
Yeah.
And okay, that's really it, I guess. There isn't a lot else other than Despicable Me 4 quietly getting to 915 million worldwide, which I would just like to point out is insane.
Okay, well, let's take a break and then we'll come back and talk about a few more news items here.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, so you mentioned Jurassic World early on in this podcast episode, Ryan. Jurassic World 4 finally has a title, and now we know what this movie is about. I think previously we had talked on the podcast about a rumor going around that it was going to be called Jurassic City, and that is not the case. So tell me a little bit about this new Jurassic movie.
That is not the case. Well, Ben, I do actually have to ask, because you know it is me, and you know that I could talk about this for a long time. How deep do we want to go here? Because Universal actually released a shocking amount of information. Do we want to just go over the bullet points, or do you want to kind of dig in here?
I would say let's drive people to the article. Let's give them the title, and we know who's in it already. So maybe title, cast, and like a couple sentence takeaway of what the thing's going to be about.
All right, good deal. So the movie is officially titled Jurassic World Rebirth, which had been heavily rumored online thanks to some, domain registrations and things like that, as these things are sometimes revealed. Scarlett Johansson leading the cast. So let's just go over the plot details here, which is it is a action-packed new chapter that sees an intrepid team racing to secure DNA samples from the three most colossal creatures across land, sea, and air. And then there is an official synopsis, which reads, 5 years after the events of Jurassic World Dominion, the planet's ecology has proven largely inhospitable to the dinosaurs. Those remaining exist in isolated equatorial environments with climates resembling the one in which they once thrived. The three most colossal creatures within the tropical biosphere hold the key to a drug that will bring miraculous life-saving benefits to humankind. There's also a bit of a sub-synopsis here, sort of describing Scarlett Johansson's character, who is a skilled covert operations expert named Zora Bennett. And she is contracted to lead a skilled team on a top secret mission to secure genetic material. And then it says, when Zora's operation intersects with a civilian family whose boating expedition was capsized by marauding aquatic dinos, they all find themselves stranded on an island where they come face to face with a sinister, shocking discovery that's been hidden from the world for decades. So it's almost like Universal gave like two different synopsises here. They gave a bunch of other different character descriptions. Also, what was interesting is Ed Skrine is in this of Deadpool fame. I don't think that had come out before. Believe it or not, that's just the bullet points. Universal really did release a lot of information here. So,
okay. So if people are interested in diving deep, they can read your article, which lays all of the details out there. I have to say, Jurassic World Rebirth, kind of an uninspired title, but I am kind of optimistic about the premise. Like, that sounds like it's different enough than what we've seen from these Jurassic movies so far that maybe there's a chance that this ends up being surprising. So I know that we've expressed a little bit of optimism about this in the past. I know you're definitely like on board with your love of Jurassic. But I think I was kind of very much in like wait and see mode of what's going on here. And I still find myself in that position, but I will say that this has not done anything really, except for the title, which I'm not thrilled about, but the synopsis has not really done anything to, it hasn't given me a reason to not be cautiously optimistic. I'll say that.
Well, and yeah, let's point out again for people that haven't been keeping up here, Gareth Edwards of Rogue One, a Star Wars Story fame, is directing this one. He's, I would argue, the best director this franchise has had in a while. I wrote another thing for us, but I do think that the synopsis hints at the problem with Dominion and Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is that it made the stakes so impossibly high. You know, you literally blew up Isla Nublar, you made the dinosaurs all over the planet, and you know, whatever. And so that it's like, where do you go from there? Well, what's interesting is the synopsis sort of suggests, okay, we're going to walk this back. We're going to make it so dinosaurs are still somewhat isolated. We're going to make it so it's not some global threat necessarily for the people involved. And it almost in some way seems like Jurassic Park 3 in that like it's going to kind of isolate a story, which is not a bad thing. Because if you're going to keep making this franchise for years to come, you can't have it be global stakes all the time. So I do think it's smart in that that's what it seems to be doing. I could talk about this for hours, but I won't. So we'll leave it at that.
All right. So I would also like to point out something about the new Green Lantern TV show that DC is working on. So James Gunn and Peter Safran over at DC are working on the show that has been described as like a riff on True Detective. I think the official title of the show is just Lanterns. It's going to primarily feature the character of Jon Stewart, who is a black man who gets a Green Lantern ring. There have been many Green Lanterns, people wearing Green Lantern rings and all of that. There's a whole Green Lantern core in the comics. And if you remember the old movie from whatever that was, 2010 through 2012, I don't remember exactly what year that came out, somewhere in that range.
2011, Ben.
Okay, yeah, so right in the middle of that range. You probably remember that there were several Green's Lantern, or whatever you want to refer to them as. And so now there's some news here that James Gunn has offered the role of Hal Jordan to Josh Brolin. And Hal Jordan is a white man who dons a Green Lantern ring. He is the character that Ryan Reynolds played in that 2011 movie. He has been a major sort of face of the whole Green Lantern idea in the comics for a long time. But it sounds like this is going to be more of like a buddy cop kind of thing with John Stewart and Hal Jordan, very much having like a Riggs Murtaugh dynamic from the Lethal Weapon movies. But I guess in this version, Hal Jordan is like the older, I'm getting too old for this shit version, who could potentially be played by Josh Brolin here. So it's really weird to me, Ryan, just to think of Josh Brolin as like one of the most potentially consequential superhero movie actors of this whole generation. Like, he does not strike me as that, but when you dig into his filmography, you're like, oh yeah, he was in that. Oh yeah, he was in that. He was in that one too. You know, like he doesn't really carry himself like one of those guys who really thrives on the limelight of Comic-Con and Hall H and, you know, walking the stage and like drinking in the adoration of the crowds, like somebody like Robert Downey Jr. does. But he's got some pretty major movies under his belt when it comes to this subgenre or whatever.
More than a few. And he also has talked quite a bit. Let's not forget that, you know, he did Jonah Hex, and he's talked about, like, you know, I think that one got away from us. He was a little upset at the way Jonah Hex went down. He wanted to see, like, he's talked about maybe like seeing a lower budget version of that and wanting to get that right. So he seems to really resonate with comic book material. Like, it doesn't seem to be this thing where he's just doing it for checks, right? Like, he seems to actually resonate with the stuff. I will say I do like the idea of like a Lethal Weapon style, like Hal Jordan passing the torch to Jon Stewart. But as I mentioned in our Slack yesterday, someone said, you know, oh, you'll probably like it. It's like this. I'm like, I'll say what I say all the time. If it were a movie, I'd watch it. Because it's a show, I probably won't. that's a bummer, but yeah, I don't know if I have any interest in watching 10 hours of Green Lantern. I don't know. I don't know. It's interesting to me to see Josh Brolin go to TV for this, though. That's the thing I think that surprises me the most, but
yeah, it's just an offer for now. He hasn't officially accepted. I should make that clear in case I didn't earlier. But yeah, as you say, and we've had our own sources who say that like this offer has been out there too, so we can verify independently that at least the offer is on the table. So it depends on whether or not he decides to take it. But
I guess what's interesting is you can at least look at like James Gunn and Peter Safran at DC Studios. Like, they're going for broke, right? Like, they're going for the biggest of big. Like, they're not going light, you know, they're getting, you know, guys like James Mangold, they're going for guys like Josh Brolin. They're, you know, I don't know. And it's interesting that if you are to believe some other casting rumors out there, that they're going for several old Marvel actors too, Josh Brolin might not be the only one. So I don't know if that's deliberate, but we'll see.
All right. So for the people who are maybe a little bit more inclined to watch a TV show than you are, Ryan, I should just mention something that we've said on the podcast before, I think, but I'll just reiterate here that Ozark writer Chris Mundy is going to be working on this. DC Comics' Tom King is working on this. And Damon Lindelof, who was responsible for the Watchmen continuation and, of course, ABC's Lost, is also one of the big names on the stable of writers of this show. So
yeah, and if you aren't like a big comic book reader, I should say Tom King is like the Damon Lindelof of comics. I don't know if that's like a fair thing to say, but like to say that Tom King is one of the best working today in comics. So like, that is a good get for that show.
Definitely. Okay, last story that I wanted to talk to you about today. We finally know what Noah Hawley's Alien TV show is about. And I think he's been talking about this for many years at this point. And the only thing that I remember about the development of the show was that I think the idea was a xenomorph is going to be on Earth. And the majority of this show is supposed to take place on Earth. And that was kind of like the original pitch for what makes this different from all the other stories set in the Alien universe, the Alien franchise, the Alien timeline, and all that. So you wrote up this article That has a lot more information about it. And again, like, you don't have to go into every single detail here. I want people to read the article if they care more about this. But give me the headline here, the takeaway that you had from writing this article.
Yeah, so I'll go over the two things that I want to talk about here. First and foremost is that this teaser that's out, which you can watch, is just a teaser. But it did, more importantly, came with an actual plot synopsis. Okay, fine. So we know it's going to be on Earth, but what does that mean? Well, now we kind of know what that means. When a mysterious space vessel crash lands on Earth, a young woman, played by Sydney Chandler, and a ragtag group of tactical soldiers make a fateful discovery that puts them face to face with the planet's greatest threat. Now, it had previously been said that this show will take place roughly 70 years from now in Earth's timeline, which would actually put it almost directly overlapping with the events of Prometheus. That is interesting because at that point, xenomorphs don't technically exist, or at least as is my best understanding of how the Alien franchise works. They don't,
because really you kind of see them form for the first time, presumably in Prometheus, right?
Well, but that thing at the end of Prometheus isn't a xenomorph, and there's been a lot of it's like a precursor to what we eventually know as a xenomorph. We don't really get full xenomorphs till Alien Covenant, which takes place in 2104, I think. So it's like about 11 years or something like that after the events of Prometheus.
Okay.
So I don't know what but there's a xenomorph in the teaser. I'll say that much. So it's clear that the xenomorphs are going to be involved. This is getting into hardcore like nerd franchise timeline territory, but I'm not super sure how that's going to work. Now, that's Noah Hawley can make it work. I'm sure that Ridley Scott's a producer on the show, so I'm sure that he at least consulted on it. So I guess what I'm saying now, that's my big question, is how does that make sense? So that's still the big question we're left with. I don't know the answers to that question, but that's the big one we're lingering currently.
Yeah. So did you say there were two things that you wanted to?
Well, that was the big, so the one was the synopsis, and then two was the question I'm left with after reading the synopsis.
Gotcha.
I don't know what your feelings are on that, but for me, that's like, I love Noah Hawley. I think he's great. So I'm assuming he's got an answer, but that's the question that I have right now.
Yeah. I wonder if they're just kind of fudging the timeline a little bit, or if they are going to sort of imply that somehow maybe the engineers created the xenomorphs and maybe a different batch of engineers created a different batch of xenomorphs like years before what happens in Alien Covenant.
It's possible because so let's assume, okay, so it doesn't explicitly say that ship crash lands and it's xenomorphs. It could be that ship crash lands and it's engineers, and maybe engineers use humans to create xenomorphs there too. Who knows? Or if like that original, it's 70 years from now, quote, was like a little bit off. Well, if it's 80 years from now, then it happens around the time of Covenant, and maybe somehow David xenomorphs are involved. I don't know. But again, these are questions I am now, like, I was going to watch the show anyway, probably, but now I'm like, all right, I want answers. Like, so they kind of have me.
Let me ask you a question. Do you know if Noah Hawley has explicitly said that this show takes place in the timeline of the events, like in the canon of the movies, or could this be, in theory, an alternate timeline kind of thing where it's just like, this is what happens in the TV show, the movies are their own thing?
It seems very, very, very difficult for me to imagine that being the case, given that it is coming from Disney, given the obsession with canon these days, given that Ridley Scott is involved. Not impossible, just hard for me to imagine. It has not been explicitly said, though.
Okay.
At least not to my knowledge. The only other thing I could imagine is that, like, there's been a lot of theorizing over the years that the Alien versus Predator films are canon in the Predator universe, but not necessarily canon in like the Alien timeline. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So like there's a theoretical option where this takes place in like the Alien versus Predator timeline, but not the Alien time. I doubt that either, but I'm just throwing out there, if we're going to just throw everything at the wall of what our options are, there's one. I I leave you to do with that what you will. I'm just saying things.
I kind of like that option just because it's the most ridiculous and the most convoluted.
Far and away the most convoluted, and it would definitely allow for like a very interesting season two. I don't know. I'm nothing if not curious. That's the most I can say for it at this point.
All right. Well, I mean, at the very least, Ren, we found a TV show that you're going to watch. So that's a small victory on its own terms, I suppose.
If it's in a franchise I already love, that's about the easiest way to get me in. So, yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about all the stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. I will link to a bunch of them in the show notes so you can do a deeper dive there. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features that you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Save big money on your next outdoor project at Menards. Menards has the best in-stock selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber. Our huge inventory of decking, fencing, lumber, and timbers are all easy to load in our drive-thru lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our fence and deck design programs in-store or online at menards.com. Don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.